Hey, we're going to begin the second parak. In the bottom of Tosafot on the base.
Second parak already.
Second parak already. Right. Mishnah says, Ha'isha Shinim. Ha'isha Shinim Amalai in Shinim Gausha. A woman was widowed or divorced, and now she wants to collect her ksuba. She emeris v'sul nefasani. So she says to her ex-husband, or in the case of an amana, she's saying to the heirs, Besula and a Sasani, you married me as a Besula, therefore I'm entitled to 200 zuz. But who I'm a loyalty alamon and a Sasich, and he says, no, I married you as a widow, or divorcee, or what have you, and you're only entitled to 100. Hello.
And there's no Adim.
So wait, so if there's no Adim directly, how could there be Adim directly whether she's a Besula or not? But, the real forget invitations. I don't write on the invitation whether she's a psula or not. The real question is why we don't just look at the ksuba. We'll talk about that on Tazayin on the base. But wait. So im yesh edim shiyotzes behinuma v'roisha perua. If there are edim that she went out, that she went to the chuppah with a hinuma, which is a veil covering her face, or v'roisha perua, or she had her hair loose. Rashi says perua means that her hair is loose, hanging down on her shoulders. Either of those things is a simon for a psula. Therefore, ksubasim asayim. So those edim are testifying that she was married with the usual simonim of a psula, and with the usual things that are done for a psula. Therefore, the ksuba is 200. Rabbi Yechon ben Berakah, ma'afchil klayis raya, and Rabbi Yechon ben Berakah says, here's the third thing. Usually, at weddings of psulas, they would give out toasted grain. Toasted grain was kind of their equivalent of candy in those days. Their equivalent of candy or corn nuts or whatever, those kinds of things. After, before, whatever, sometime during the wedding, they would give out these klayas, toasted grain, which is sweet. They'd give out to the kids.
So you keep them as a proof.
No, not you keep them as a proof. But another, the point is with all these. The point is if Adam come and say that she had a veil, or Adam come and say that her hair was uncovered, or according to Rabbi Yechon ben Berakah, Adam come and say that this toasted grain was given out as candy to the kids.
No.
That's also.
Why do you look and take this over?
We'll talk about that later. Wait. The Gemara will get to that later. Yes. Even nowadays, a psula written for a psula says, Besul to da, this psula. If she's not, that's right, yeah. Sometimes it happens. I mean, this isn't really the place to get into it, but sometimes it happens for one reason or another. The kala is not a psula, but you don't want to publicize that. But then, you know, you write the psula. Either what you do is you don't write the psula da in the ksuba. You write Be'ulado, or whatever the exact expression is, and just when you're reading the ksuba out loud at the chuppah, you insert the word besulta da, because what you read doesn't necessarily have to match
besulta
what it means this besula. Or sometimes I've even heard of they do write besulta da. Fine, if a chassan is willing to give a ksuba of 200 voluntarily, fine. We learned in Perek Aleph that the that daughters kohenim would demand 400. So, yeah, I mean, you can write whatever amount in the ksuba you want. If you are willing to write in the ksuba that she's a psula, even though she's not, fine, give them to hey.
Can do that?
You can do that. I've heard, I'm not sure, it probably depends which poskim you ask. I'm not real sure about that. But the other solution that I've heard of is you don't write the psulta da in the ksuba, but you read it verbally in order not to embarrass her in public. You read it when you're reading the ksuba. The psulta da. This psula.
But even today, even if a woman is not psula, they write psula.
So they do that? Okay, so that's what I was saying. Was one possibility. Either they actually write it in the ksuba, or they don't write it, but they read it that way. Anyway.
You can read something different.
Apparently, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, no. By the way, this business about Rosh Perua becomes a big discussion among the Achronim over the question of Bechal. We know Seir Be'isha Erva, a woman's supposed to cover her hair. Here you're saying that when she's going to the chuppah, her hair is uncovered.
She's in the suah. And,
well, one second. When she's going to the chuppah, she's not yet in a suah. She's in arusa. So it gets into the question. For one second, relax. First of all, the question is, b'chlal, is an unmarried girl allowed to keep her hair uncovered? And second of all, even if an unmarried girl is, what about an arusa? B'chlal, she's also to the whole world. Why shouldn't she have to cover her hair? So actually, there are a lot of different possibilities about that. First of all, I mean, we know nowadays, even there's different minhagim when women start covering their hair. There are women who start covering their hair before the chuppah, so that way when they're under the chuppah, when she becomes a nesua, then she already has her hair covered. Others do it only after the yichud room. Others only do it the next morning after, presumably, the Be'ilus Mitzvah has been done.
We do it after the...
I've seen different minhagim among the Babachers themselves, whether they do it after the yichud. I've seen different minhagim among the Babachers themselves. I think most people do it. My sense is that most people do it the next morning, but I think there are some people who do it after the chuppah. Anyway, Well, I don't know, really. Anyway, so it gets into a whole discussion. Do we mean when we say perua over here, maybe it means, does it mean all of her hair is uncovered, or maybe it doesn't mean she's wearing a hat or veil or what have you that covers most of her hair and only a little bit of it is sticking out? Maybe, fine, we'll make an exception, especially over here she's surrounded by the Shushvinin and the Unterfuhrers and whatnot. Maybe you can make an exception for that. So you have all these different possibilities of Bechlal. What do we mean that her hair is uncovered? Incidentally, the Yerushalmi has some interesting things to say about why. What we mean that there's Edim that she went out with her hair uncovered, but then there are three different explanations in Mefarshim what the Yerushalmi means. The Yerushalmi says something about Yom Kippur. The one possibility is it means that when a Besula would go out with her hair uncovered to the Chuppah, it was meant as an expression of mourning. Similar to the way that we don't wear shoes on Yom Kippur, they would go out, an oval would typically have her hair loose, and therefore, so this would be as a siman of avelos for the fact that we don't have the Beis HaMikdash. So similar to the way that we...
In a day of a wedding?
Well, the same way as the chassan breaks the glass, and the same way as... Same way as the chassan breaks the glasses to remember the churban. Okay, but you know what though? In Shulchan Aruch it says that I don't know, by the way, why I've never seen this done nowadays, but in Shulchan Aruch it says that they're supposed to put ashes on the chassan's head, also as a symbol of mourning. I've never seen that done.
To break the glass?
Okay. Okay, whatever. Anyway, so that's one explanation of what the Yerushalmi means. Two other explanations are fakek. It means that when we say that there's Edim that she went out Verosha Perua, doesn't mean that she went out going to a wedding with Verosha Perua. It means that they saw her on Yom Kippur, where the Mishnah says at the end of Tainis that the girls would go dance in the vineyards. So they saw her dancing over there with her hair uncovered. It's a sign that she's a psula, that she's not yet married. And a third explanation is that Verosha Perua means what kind of Verosha Perua is acceptable as evidence that she's a psula if she has it nicely styled, like people would do when they go out Yom Kippur. Not just Stam that it's hanging loose, which might just mean that she doesn't really care about her appearance. Anyway, yeah.
She cares more than a woman who's married, in that
way. Well, no.
I would never see a cobbler gone with the hair. What's the mission in Gossam?
No
cobbler would ever do that.
Right.
I don't think they did it in time to Gemara.
Okay. So it depends what explanation of the Yerushalmi you take. Anyway, let's continue the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Umoydi Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Yeshua admits. And how does the second half of the Mishnah have anything to do with the first half? We'll talk about it in the Gemara. If one person says to another, so this field used to belong to your father, and I bought it from him, that we believe him, that he bought it. Also, because we have a concept in Halacha, the mouth that after it is the same mouth that was after it. In other words, he's saying, basically in the same breath, that this field belonged to your father, which should imply, therefore it belongs to you, but I bought it from him. Without him saying anything, there's no proof that it ever belonged to the father. So he himself is saying that, and he himself is undoing that by saying that I bought it.
And the other person doesn't say anything?
Ah, so that's the machlokes Rashi to understand. Rashi says that no. Rashi says that the other person was not claiming anything. This person voluntarily says, it based in this field that I'm owning, that this field that I own now, your father used to own it and I bought it from him. But according to Rashi, it would come out, if the other guy was Tevea, if the other guy was claiming, then maybe we wouldn't accept this Apesha also Apesha Hitcher business. Whether Apesha also Apesha Hitcher is because of Migur is another question. That's Rishonim have a lot of discussion whether, what's the mechanism by which Apesha also Apesha Hitcher works? Is it a kind of Migur? Is it, I could have had a stronger claim? Or is it something different? Yeah. And which kind of Migur does Rabbi Yeshua accept that we're saying he's Moed over here? We'll get to that as we go through the discussion.
Talk about a marriage and chuppah.
That's why the Gemara is going to point out what the relationship is. But anyway.
I want to hear something. Okay. He just be quiet. He doesn't know anything. He knows this guy. And he comes along and he says, it belonged to your father and I bought it.
Yeah.
I don't know. His father bought it 50 years before he was born. How does he know?
Okay. So that's what
we say. Why can't he be believed?
So according to Rashi, if I could.
Because
according to Rashi, he could have not said anything. The other guy's not claiming anything.
But he wants to make himself a stronger...
Maybe whatever it is he wants. Okay. Anyway, according to Tosfos, we're talking about even if the other guy is Tevea, even if the other guy is claiming it, But he still has a migu. According to Tosfos, Sapesha Sapesha Hitu basically works because it's a kind of migu. Not because he could have been quiet. According to Rashi, he could have been quiet. According to Tosfos, if the other guy is being Teveyu, it's claiming the field belongs to me, or the field belongs to my father, and therefore it should belong to me, you don't have an option of being quiet. If you're quiet, you're going to lose the field. No, what it is you have a migu, though, because you could counterclaim, this field never belonged to your father. You're saying it belong to your father. You don't know what you're talking about. No, instead he's saying, I agree it once belonged to your father, but I bought it from him. That works as a migri. That works as a migri.
Because he could have denied it.
Yeah. However, v'imyesh edim shichalavi, but if there are edim, hello, if there are edim that field once belonged to the other guy's father, and the current occupant of the field is claiming that I bought it from him, then we don't believe him. Because then he doesn't have the migri, and he doesn't have, because then it's not a pesha also who a pesha hits here, because his mouth is not the one telling us that it ever belonged to the father. Yeah. So the Gemara starts off. Taima de'ika edim. What are we saying in the first part of the Mishnah, that when the woman is claiming you married me as a besula, and the husband or their husband's yorshim say that it was as a beula? The Ikka Edim, only because there are Edim. Do we say that she had a Hinuma or whatever, all these different things, then we believe her. Halakha Edim Baal Mahaman, which implies if there's no Edim of Hinuma or Rosh HaPerua or whatever, then we would believe the husband, and he'd only have to pay the 100. The question is, Lema Tnan Snama, the like Rabban Gamliel. Does that mean we have a Stam Mishnah here not like Rabban Gamliel? We had the four Machloikasin of Rabban Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua in the previous Perek, where the Chosin is making one claim and the Kala is counterclaiming something. And we say in each case, Rabban Gamliel, Dir Rabban Gamliel, Alma, Yimahemda. In all those four, I'm mentioning four cases, but the truth is only two of those cases were about a claim between the husband and the wife. The other two, the case of Ra'ur Medaberes and the case of Hoysim Uberes, are not a husband and wife thing. Those are other situations. But in the first two cases that we had over there, where she's claiming Misher Stani Ne'enachti, or she's claiming Mukasei, then, and we say we believe her, without aid. The answer is, I feel the tamer Rav Gamliel. You could even say that our Mishnah goes according to Rav Gamliel, because Ad Kam LeKomer Rav Gamliel Hasim El Bebori V'Shema. Because Rav Gamliel is talking about over there, you know why you believe her? Because she's making a definite claim. She's saying, I was definitely Mukaseis, or whatever. And he's making a Shema. Maybe it was Durafatish. Maybe it was after. Maybe it was before we were engaged, whatever. Here each side is making a body claim. I know for sure that you married me as a basola. No, I know for sure that I married you as an almana. Even remembering a meal doesn't have to agree that you would believe her without aiding. Okay, it's a very obvious distinction. The question is, the Gemara asks, Udkari la my kari la. Okay, whoever asked the question, what was he even thinking when he asked the question? Ha bori or bori? Indeed, our Mishnah is a case of bori or bori. It's clearly different than the cases in the previous parak. What even made us think of the question to think that our Mishnah shouldn't be like Rav Gamliel? The answer is, Kivin Hirov Noshim Basulis Nisois, because since most women are married as Basulis, Kibori Vishema Dami. Effectively, we might argue that this case over here of our Mishnah is sort of similar to a Bori Vishema. She not only has her definite claim, she has her definite claim that I was married as a Psula, and it's backed up by the fact that most women are married as Psulas. Two Rove was for the matter of Yuchsin. That was it, but no, here it's not two Roves. Here it's one Rove plus her own claim. But when he's claiming back that, no, I married you as a widow, he's going against that chazaka, he's going against that roiv. So maybe you should argue that makes his claim weaker. So therefore, the maksha... It would be sort of the equivalent of a shema. So therefore, the maksha, whoever asked the question at the beginning, thought that maybe that indicates that the Mishnah is not like Rav Gamliel. And the answer is no. The fact is, chazaka, no chazaka, the fact is, there you're talking bari v'shema, because whatever claim the husband makes that you're not mukaseitz or whatever is a shema, he can't know for sure, she's the one, in the previous parak. Whereas over here, both of them are making definite claims. And the Gemara says,
that's because of the rov.
No. We're saying the Roiv would make it, the Roiv makes it, we would think the Roiv makes her claim stronger than his. We're saying, though, the answer of the Gemara is that it doesn't matter. The answer of the Gemara at this stage, anyway, is it doesn't matter. Right. The fact that Roiv Noshim Basulis Nisais. The fact is, each of them is making a definite claim. Rav Gamliel does not have to agree that in cases of definite claims, regardless of Chazaka, not Chazaka, whatever, that we should believe one over the other. And therefore, you're back to the situation. She's trying to take away money. She's trying to take away 200 zuz as opposed to 100. Therefore, she needs more evidence. Whereas in the previous cases, since all he had was a Shema claim anyway, fine, a Shema claim doesn't stand up to a body.
We don't use the Rav in this case.
In this case, we're saying we don't use the Rav. Yeah. Rav Gamliel himself would say in our Mishnah as well that forget about the Rav, you have Bari versus Bari, and that's a different situation. And the Gemara says, Hachi Nami Mistabra, this in fact seems to be logical, Mishkatani, Umoydi Rabbi Yeshua, because what does the Mishnah continue with a case that Rabbi Yeshua admits? So, if you say that Rabbi Gamliel effectively in the first half of the Mishnah is admitting something to Rabbi Yeshua, Shapir, then it works out well. In other words, in the first half of the Mishnah, Rabbi Gamliel effectively is saying, if we assume that the first half of the Mishnah is according to Rabbi Gamliel, in that first half, Rabbi Gamliel is effectively saying that I argued with you on Bari Veshema four times in the previous parak, but it comes to Bari or Bari, the case of our Mishnah, I agree with your position. You need more evidence. You can't just believe her just like that. And then the Mishnah continues that Rabbi Yeshua says to Rabbi Gamliel, you know what, here is a case where I will concede to you. The case of a Pesha, also a Pesha Yitir. But if you're going to say that Rabbi Gamliel is not admitting anything in the first half of the Mishnah, if you were to say that the first half of the Mishnah is not according to Rabbi Gamliel anyway, Rabbi Yeshua the Man Moida, then who is Rabbi Yeshua admitting to? We shouldn't assume then if the first half of the Mishnah is a Stam Mishnah, not according to Rabbi Gamliel, it's not really logical that all of a sudden the second half of the Mishnah, Rabbi Yeshua would be referring back to the previous Perek and saying, you know what, I disagreed with you on Bari B'Shema, but I agree with you on a Pesha also a Pesha. It would be out of place.
He couldn't disagree with anybody.
He could be admitting to Rabbi Gamliel, but then this part, Umoydu Rabbi Yeshua, would have belonged more in the previous parak. As opposed to, if you say the first half is... In the first parak, Rabbi Gamliel said, in all those cases of Bari Veshema, that you believe the wife. Because she's making Bari, and she's claiming Bari, he's claiming Shema.
Everybody believes that.
No, we said that Rabbi Yeshua doesn't. Rabbi Yeshua said each of those times, Lo Mepiyanu Chayin. We said a few... because we said that very well she's making a body claim, but you need more than that.
We're just in way. Bring that the argument.
So that's what we're saying over here, that if we say that that the first half of our Mishnah is implicitly Rabbi Gamliel admitting to Rabbi Yeshua, I argued with you on Bari Veshema, but I agree with you that we can't just believe her off the bat on Bari or Bari, right. Then fine, Rabbi Yeshua continues, you know what, I disagreed with you on Bari Veshema, but I agree with you on Apesha also Apesha Hitu. Right. If the first half of the Mishnah is not Rabbi Gamliel speaking at all, it's just a Stam Mishnah, then what all of a sudden in the second half is Rabbi Yeshua coming and saying, I admit. Who is he admitting to? Tosfos discusses this and discusses and then says a different pshat if you're going to say that, and if you're going to say that the first half of the Mishnah is not even something that Rabbi Gamliel was ever dealing with, then why? Then again, why is Rabbi Yeshua being boida? We have to say that the first half of the Mishnah is something that Rabbi Gamliel is dealing with, a matter of migli. The question, the Gemara answers that, not necessarily, because you could still say that the first half of the Mishnah is just a Stam Mishnah,
right.
Because Mi Sabar Rabbi Yeshua Hai Pirkin Koi, you're thinking that Rabbi Yeshua has to be referring to something in this parak. No, Amigui Koi, he's not dealing with the question of Bori Veshema versus Bori Ubori, he's going back to the matter of Migui, Pirkin Kamakoi, he's referring back to the first parak. That in the first parak we argued in a couple of places whether we believe her based on a Migui, and I disagreed in all those cases. But here, I admit that you have something where you believe him on account of Apesha Asta or Apesha Hitu. So the question is, Aheya, which of the four cases from the first parak are we referring to? So we're going to go through them in reverse order. Elayma Aha, are we referring... We're referring back to the first parak. So Aheya, which thing in the first parak? Ilei ma'aha, are we referring back to the last case in the previous parak, the last case where Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua argued, where the case was hoisim uberes, the woman is pregnant, v'amal amati v'shal uberzeh, they ask her what's the story with this baby, she says, me'ish pleinu v'koyinu, it's from so-and-so, who is a koyin, so the baby is kosher, not a mamzer, not a nafsin, what have you, Rabbi Gamliel v'Rabbi Elazar v'Rabbi Ne'emanes, Rabbi Yeshua v'Rabbi Pionu chayin, the question is, hasa mai migri ika. You're saying, if you're going to tell me that Rabbi Yeshua is saying, I argued with you on cases of Migui, but I'm admitting in a case of a pesha also a pesha hitter that we can believe her. Well, that case, there's no migui, how to create a benchina. There's no stronger claim that she can make than there's no stronger claim that she can make than this guy was kosher. We see her already pregnant, so she obviously had relations with somebody.
Oh, yes. Somebody comes over, the woman says,
just a second, let it
No.
What are you, you're pregnant? He says, well, I'm this, that's
yeah.
Why would you believe him?
According to Rabbi Yeshua, you don't, because because she doesn't have a migui.
Well, she's going to have a migui. Anybody from... Any woman is pregnant,
you and we look.
A normal
case where a woman is pregnant, we know that she's pregnant. We assume she's pregnant by her husband. Right. This woman is unmarried.
She's unmarried.
So therefore, and we learned in the previous parak that Rabbi Yeshua holds that we learned in the previous parak that at least one way of understanding Rabbi Yeshua is that a woman when she's mizana is not going to check carefully who she's mizana with. So there we are. So we can't say that we're referring back to that. How they create the Benchinel. She's obviously pregnant, so there's no migui. When she says this guy was a Kayan, the guy I was with, oh, that's the strongest possible claim she could make. If Rabbi Yeshua is saying you don't believe, that's you don't have a migui. Ella Ahas, and maybe we're referring back to the previous case in that Mishnah, Ra'uah Medaberesi. So this one is out. We can't say that Rabbi Yeshua in our Mishnah, Moed Rabbi Yeshua, is referring to that one. Let's try the next previous one. If they saw a woman speaking with somebody, and we said before what speaking meant, two possibilities, we'll bring it up over here again. And they ask her, what's the story with this guy? And she says, it's so-and-so who is a Kayan. Again, they say, we believe her. Again, the question is, what migui does she have exactly? So now let's consider. There it's a little more complicated. It works out well according, remember we said there, we had two explanations of what medaberes meant. We had Ze'iri, who said it meant nistera, that she was secluded with this guy, but we don't know whether any be'ila took place.
Yeah.
And Rav Asi, who said that it meant that we saw be'ila. So according to we ended up slugging up Rav Asi, but still Rav Asi slugged him up from a braisa. He still has to have a way of understanding our Mishnah. So Hanichal is Ze'iri. So it works out well according to Ze'iri. Damamai medaberes nistera, who said that medaberes means that she's secluded. Well, good. Migur di boy amr loy nivalti. Since she could have said I didn't have relations with this guy, vika amr nivalti, and instead she makes a weaker claim that I had relations. We saw that she was secluded with this guy. We saw that she was secluded. We don't know whether Bia took place. We ask her, what's the story with this guy? She says, Ish Pliny Makoyan, implying that she actually had relations with him. Otherwise, who cares whether he's a Kayan or not? So she's admitting that Nivaldi, the Ka'amra Nivaldi, Mehemna. So according to Ze'iri, you could argue she has a migui over there. She could have said, I wasn't Nival. Instead, she says, I was Nival, but it was a kosher person. That's a migui. And Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer are believing her on that basis. So then you would say, Rabbi Yeshua says, I disagree in that case. I don't accept that migui. But I'll accept the migui of our Mishnah. But according to Rav Asi, who says that Naberes means that we actually saw that she had relations, my migui. Again, there's no migui. The claim that she's making, that he's a Kohen, is the strongest possible claim she could make. The Ela Aha, so let's refer back to the previous Mishnah. He emeres mukaseitzani. If the woman claims that I'm mukaseitz, v'hu I'm eloiti ala drusa sishat, and he says, no, you had relations with a man. Again, let's consider. According to Rav Gamliel and Rav Eliezer, what migui does she have in that case? So again, let's consider. There was a machlokas on the understanding of that Mishnah also. Rav Eliezer had said over there that the argument between the Chassan and Kala is she's claiming I'm a Mukas 8, therefore I'm entitled to 100, because we said that Abanan hold that a Mukas 8 gets 100. The husband is claiming you were Jerusalem ish before we were ever engaged. It was Mechachtos, and therefore you're not entitled to any Ksuba. So one second. Then she does have a Migui. Migui di boy amr mukas eit ani tachtecha. Because she could have made a stronger claim. She's saying mukas eit, that I was a mukas eit before we ever got engaged. I'm admitting that I don't get the full 200. I get only 100. She could have instead said, no. No, what do you mean by you? Mukaseit doesn't mean involving a human being. I mean, there was a piece of wood or whatever.
Right.
She could have claimed that this happened after our kiddushin, in which case, nistach hasadeo, tough luck on you. Yeah. she could have said Mukaseh Tani Tachtecha v'Islam Asayim, and then she would get 200. Vika Amra Me'ikra, and then she admits that it happened before the Erusin, the Lesla Elamana, where then she only gets a mana. Mehemnan, we're saying Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer believe her. So again, then you could say Rabbi Yeshua is saying, I don't accept that Migui, but I'll accept the Migui over here. Tachtecha means under you, meaning while we were after we already have a relationship. Yeah. Elo Rabbi Yechanan to Amar Masayim Ramana, but according to Rabbi Yechanan, said that she's claiming that I get 200 because according to the mayor, and he's claiming you only get 100. My migri, so what migri is there? She's claiming the maximum amount that she'd be entitled to. You still can't say Rabbi Yeshua, according to Rabbi Yechanan, you still can't say that Rabbi Yeshua is referring back in our Mishnah when he says that I agree in a Pesha Asa, a Pesha Hezer, that he'd be referring back to that.
In this case, there's no.
Yeah. Right. According to Rabbi Yechanan, right. Ella aha. So no, let's go back to the first Mishnah of the series. Somebody marries a woman and finds that she doesn't have a Sulim. He meres mishera stani nenafti. She says it happened that after the Erusin I was raped. Therefore your field is flooded. In other words, tough luck. You still owe me the 200. He says no, it happened or it may have happened before the Erusin, which then I only have to pay 100. Rav Gamliel, Rav Elazar, and Nemenetz, Rav Yishra, and Pion Chayin. What's the migui? The migui, the Iboya Amram Mukas Eitzani Tachtecha. She could have said, instead of saying that it was an onus, she could have said I'm a Mukas Eitz, and it happened, she's claiming already it happened after the Eitzin anyway. She could have claimed, instead of onus, that it was Mukas Eitz, which, Jaloi Kapasla Nafshe Mikahuna, that's a better claim for her because then she does not possible herself from marrying a Kohen. V'ka'amra Nen Nafti, instead she says that I was raped, the Kapasla Nafshe Mikahuna, which then she is possibling herself from Kohuna. Mishum Hachi, Ka'amra Ram Gamliel de Behemna. So that's why Ram Gamliel says we believe her. The truth is not only a Migri. We talked when we learned in the first paragraph that Ram Gamliel has a couple of reasons to believe her, but a Migri is one of them.
Main one?
For this purpose, the main one. Rabbi Yeshua is arguing with that. So, Rabbi Yeshua, the migui of our Mishnah, I agree to you that we accept his, we accept what he's saying. But in the migui over there, in that Mishnah, the first Mishnah of the series, in the first paragraph, I disagree with you. Now, question is, mechti high migui behind migui. If both of them are migui, maishna high migui behind migui. So what's the type of the difference? Why does Rabbi Yeshua agree to one and disagree with the other? The answer is, hacha ein shor shachot lefanecha. Because here in our Mishnah, there's no ox shechted in front of you. Hossam, in that case, Hare Shor Shachot Lefanecha. In that case, there is an ox shechted in front of you. So what does that mean? So Rashi says it means like this: If a person owns an ox, and one day he comes and finds the ox shechted, he's going to start asking around who shechted it. In other words, in modern English, I guess you would say there's no smoking gun. There's nothing to make you think that there's anything wrong over here. If there's ein shor shachot lefanecha, if there's no shechted ox, you have no reason to start asking around who shechted it. In our Mishnah, remember Rashi held that the case of our Mishnah is nobody is claiming the field. The guy who currently owns it voluntarily says, you know what, this field used to belong to your father and I bought it from him. So there's no shor shachot lefanecha. Nobody was making any claim in the first place. Whereas in the case in the first paragraph, the husband is making a claim. He's making a tainus psulim.
We're saying when there's no claim, it's a
so when there's no claim, then that's a stronger migui. So Rashi, the reason is because Rashi holds the kind of migui that Rabbi Yeshua is willing to accept. It's called migui di boi shosik. It's a migui that his stronger claim could have been that he didn't have to say anything. As opposed to the migui of the first paragraph is not a migui di boi shosik. If he says, I didn't find you a psula, and she's shosik, then she has problems. She has to say something. Rabbi Yeshua doesn't accept that kind of migui. Tosfos has a different explanation of Shor Shachot Lefanecha, and they, along with many other Rishonim, have a problem with Rashi's explanation of what kind of migui Rabbi Yeshua accepts. They say the difference is like this. A Shor Shachot is, when you see a shechted ox in front of you, it's dead. There's no way that you can say it's alive. Same way, in the previous parrot, when the husband finds that she doesn't have basulim, that's it. There's nothing to argue about. She can't possibly argue, I am a basula. The most she can argue is, I'm not a basula because of something that shouldn't prevent me from marrying a kohen or from getting the 200 zuz or whatever. But she has to claim, as opposed to our Mishnah, even remember, Tosfos had held that in our Mishnah, somebody else is claiming the field. Somebody else is saying, this field used to belong to my father. But it's not, so unlike Rashi that you could be quiet, you can't be quiet in that case, if you have to say something, but you have an option of saying, you have an option of denying the whole thing. It wasn't your father's. There's no sure shachos, there's no obvious evidence, there's no smoking gun in front of us to show that to show that the guy's claim has any validity. Whereas in Tainus Besulim of the first paragraph, there is evidence, and the fact is there's no Besulim.
In other words, he would have some level of ego.
No. Both Rashi and Tosfos are saying that you have a certain level of migui. The difference is, according to Tosfos, what it is Rabbi Yeshua is saying, when you have a migui where you say you have a stronger claim, weaker claim, or whatever, but the claim is a claim, then Rabbi Yeshua says, I don't accept that. But when you have a case like here, what is the migui over here? The migui is that you could make a claim that would completely destroy the other guy's case. You could claim the field never belonged to your father. You say it belonged to your father, I say it didn't, and that's it. Nothing to talk about. As opposed to the case of Besulim from the first Perek, where whatever claim she makes, the fact is she's not a Besula. The fact she doesn't have a way of claiming that I am a Besula. So that's the difference. Sure, shachot or not.
She has no.
There's no way to dismiss his claim entirely. The best she can do is say, you know what? Even though the fact is I'm not a Basula, nevertheless, though, there's a reason that I should be entitled to the 200, and there's a reason I should be able to marry a Kohen. As opposed to here, where he could just say the thing never belonged to your father in the first place, and there's nothing to talk about. The Baal Amar has a third explanation of
the position of Rabbi Yehoshua.
That's the answer. According to Tosfos, the vote is Rabbi Yeshua would say, we accept the migui when your stronger claim is something that would dismiss the whole thing. As opposed to when your stronger claim is just something where the case still exists. You have a stronger claim, but the case still exists. Then Rabbi Yeshua could argue on the contrary. You know what? She might dafka be playing a trick. She might be using the weaker claim because she knows if she uses the stronger claim, nobody's going to believe her. Because we're not going to have any evidence. So she'll use the weaker claim and figure that she'll get away with a migui.
But why does she claim if he bothered her father?
Because there exists a chazaka that at one time it belonged to the father. It means your claim is valid. The field did at one time belong.
He doesn't have any papers, in other words.
Because he could have said he never does.
Yeah, he doesn't have any papers. He has a chazaka, whatever, yeah. Which then he has to start doing. Ede chazaka, whatever, yeah. The Baal Amar has a different explanation of the expression Sher Shachot Lefanecha. He says it's like you have an animal before it's shechted has a chazaka of being osur until it's shechted.
Osur means
a live animal is osur to eat. Eifem and achai. Until it's shechted.
Yeah.
This is why we say, for example, that if there's a suffix in the shechita, then we have to assume that it's nevela because it doesn't have a cheskas kasher.
Right.
So similarly over here, so he has the gears to the other way around. The Baal Amar has a gear to the other way around in the Gemara. He says that in our Mishnah there's no Shor Shachot Lefanecha because there's no chazaka that the field ever belonged to the other guy's father and that it should be also. Whereas there is a chazaka. There is a chazaka. There is the fact of the matter. The facts show us that she's not a Besula. Or no, the other way around. In Shor Shachot Lefanecha, it's as if the ox was not shechted and therefore still has a cheskas iser. Okay. Next, the question is, Chivin de Roiv Nashim Besulis Nisais. Now, we established before that most women are married as Besulis. Kiloi also Edim Mayavi. So what's the problem? If no Edim come, why don't we just rely on the Roiv? So we said before, the Roiv is not strong enough. We discussed the question before, does the Roiv make her claim stronger or not? But forget about Edim or not. At least she should be able to claim that she's a Besulah based on the Roiv.
We said we didn't rely on the Roiv.
No, we said we don't. We said the Roiv doesn't necessarily. We didn't rule it out. We said that maybe it doesn't make her claim stronger. Maybe it doesn't downgrade the other guy's claim to a Shema. But at the very least, what do we need Edim at all? Rely on the Roiv. She's claiming something based on Roiv, and that should be good enough for us. And actually, there is a machloikas elsewhere in Shas whether, in fact, in Dine Mominis you go after the Roiv or not. The thing is, here not only you have Tosfos Yishanim points out on the side over here not only you have a Roiv, but also you have Cheskas Aguf. Again, at one time in her life, she obviously was a Psula. So those two things together, the Roiv that most women get married as Psulas, and the Chazaka that at one time she was a Psula, those two things together should be strong enough without Edim.
What can we say about it today?
What
we still say is Rav Nachshon Basuris.
Sure. I mean, and maybe not in the wider, not in the wider world, but in the Jewish and in the Frum world. No, Amar Ravina, Mishum de Ikla Meimra, because you can say like this, Roiv Nashim Basolis Nisais, it's true, most women are married as Basolis, Umiot Amonis, it's true, only a minority are Amonis, but, V'chola, this is Basola Yashla Koil, but when a woman gets married as a Basola, there's a Koil, it becomes public knowledge. That's the Hinuma and all that makes it public knowledge. The zoo, in this case, Koil V'ein La Koil, since if you don't have anybody able to come and be made, and be made that she had a Hinuma or what have you, Itzrel Aruba. So that ruins the Roiv. That makes it less likely that she is part of that Roiv. Because, now, Edim are stronger than a Koil, obviously, but the difference is, usually you say, if you have a Koil saying one thing and you have Edim saying the opposite, then we believe the Edim. Here what it is usually the Koil and the Edim would be saying the same thing, and there's no Koil over here. Therefore, there's more reason to assume that without Edim, that nothing happened, that she was a Bola. Okay, so then the question is, E call on this is Basula Yeshla Koil. If you're saying that all the Basulas who get married, that there's a Koil, Ki also Edim, my hobby. So what happens? So what does it help if Edim come? Hadach Sadi Shakrin, and obviously there must be false Edim. Because if every Basula has a Koil and she doesn't, yeah, that's that. Then that should be good enough. The Mishnah is implying that even without a Koil, Edim are good enough, but why? The answer is Ella Amar Ravina, Roiv Hanis is Basula Yeshla Koil. Not all the Basulas, but most Basulas who get married, there's a Koil. Here there's no Koil, therefore that weakens the Roiv, but it's still not enough to say that the Edim are false. If Edim do come, who remember that she had a Hinuma, etc., that's good enough in the absence of a Koil.
How do we check that there was a Koil?
Because usually you would have people would remember, people would talk about you remember Plonus, you remember Plonus's wedding, it was the event of the year, you know? And we'll talk about soon in the Gemara at the bottom of the Amud, different things. Okay, but, yeah. The point is, though, the wedding of a Basula is usually a very big affair. The wedding of a Ba'ula, the wedding of an Amana, whatever, is usually a more low-key affair. You get together a mini in somebody's house and do it or something, you know. Then the Mishnah said, Imi yesh Edim sheyatza v'inuma b'chula, that if there's Edim that she went out with a veil, etc., then she gets the 200. Question is, the Leichush, why aren't we concerned? Dilma Mapka Edim Bahai Beidina, what if she brings the Edim to the Beis Din in one city, the Gavia, and she collects her Ksuba, the Hadam Mapka Lola Ksuba Bahai Beis Din, then she pulls out her Ksuba in another Beis Din, as long as the Ksuba hasn't been paid, she still holds on to it, so she pulls out the Ksuba in another Beis Din, the Gavia Bar, and then she collects with it also, and then she's collected double. Thus, you see from this the din that you write a receipt. Now, there's a machloikus about this towards the end of Bava Basra. The question is, when Reuven lends Shimon money, when Shimon is paying it back, is it that Shimon is entitled to demand that Reuven give him the shtar chayv so that he can rip it up or whatever? And if not, if Reuven doesn't have the shtar chayv available, then Shimon is able to hold back. Is able to hold back paying. Is able to say, I'm not going to pay you until you give it to me. Or do we say, Shimon, pay him now? He doesn't have the shtar chayv. Okay, we will write you out a receipt. Reuven will write you out a receipt or whatever. And if he ever pulls out that shtar chayv, you pull out the receipt. That's a machlokes over there. So we see from this. I'm not sure, but the point is, we see from our Mishnah evidently that you have to write a receipt.
I gave a sum, and I didn't get the receipt.
Okay.
So we'll get it.
Okay. It's not only the problem. No, here the situation is they will give you the receipt. But the question isn't so much whether they'll give you the receipt. The question is, then you have to hold on to it for a very long time because you never know. The guy might pull out the... Yeah, you might lose it. You might... Anything. Any kind of accident might happen. You're asking what the halacha is? I don't know. Let's see real quick. The halacha is that the... Actually, I don't know. I don't see it just now. Okay, anyway. We can look it up afterwards, I guess. Anyway. Let's not get too far off topic. The point is, we see from our Mishnah, evidently, that you have to write a shover. So therefore, a receipt. So therefore, what's going to happen? So as soon as she brings out her edim and the ex-husband or the heirs of the husband, in the case of an almana, pay off the ksuba, right away, Beis Din will write them out a receipt. And if she ever comes, if she ever tries to pull this kind of shenanigans and pull out the ksuba on another base din, the husband will show her the receipt, and yeah. Rapapa Amar, b'makom she'en kosvin ksuba askin. And you know what? Our Mishnah could be talking about the kind of place where they don't necessarily write a ksuba. The ksuba is kind of chachamim, that you have to have, the husband has to promise 200 zuz for a psula and 100 for a bola, or for an amona, or what have you. But not necessarily in all places did actually write a document for this. There were places where they just relied the takana of the chachamim, and that's it. As long as we know that they were married, then they didn't write out a ksuba. So therefore, there's no ksuba for her to pull out. Okay? The ikka de masnila abraisa. Others learn that this machloikas of Rabbi Bo and Rapapa refers to a braisa. The braisa says, ibda ksubasa, if the woman lost her ksuba, hitmina ksubasa, or if she hid away her ksuba, and we'll talk soon what that means, Nisra Foksubasa, or if Foksuba is burnt, Rokdulafanea, then if there are Adim that by her wedding they danced in front of her, Sakakulafanea, or they played around in front of her, like the kind of entertainment that they do at weddings. Like, you know, people standing on their heads and setting their hats on fire, and then and all the other shtick that the Bacharim always do. Hevirulafanea Koistral Basoda, or if they passed in front of her a cup of good news, which we'll talk about soon what that means. A makshal basulim, or the cloth of basulim. They would literally bring in the cloth that had the blood on it to show that she's a basula. I guess the standards, I guess, were... No, so it would be afterwards, for the Sheva, if there are edim of any of these things, go over Masayim, Ksubasa Masayim, then she gets 200 zuz. So now, again, the question is, based on this price, aren't we afraid that she's going to bring the edim to one or another of these things, that she'll bring them to one based in, collect her ksuba, and then she's going to pull out the shtau ksuba, and a second based in, and collect with it. And again, Rabbi Bo says that shows that you have to write a receipt. Actually, here we have, okay, here you have the Kreutzman Shover is referred to the side over here, so there you go, the halacha is Kreutzman Shover. Rapapa says, we're talking about a place where they don't write a ksuba, so therefore there's no shtar ksuba for her to pull out. Now, what do you mean they don't write a ksuba? The Braisa had described a case. Mela, the Mishnah hadn't said anything about ksuba. You could say it's talking about a place where they don't write one. The Braisa had clearly said, ibda ksubasa, she lost her ksuba. Obviously, it was a ksuba. The answer is okay, because of la'ihu. It could be the kind of place where typically they don't write a ksuba. This particular person decided to write her one. So she says, Makalova Gabjaba, anew, then she's going to pull that out and collect with it. The answer is, my ibda ba'ur. You're right. What does it mean when it says she lost her ksuba? It would mean, what happens? This is a place where they don't typically write a ksuba. In this case, this particular chassan decided to write one. Then she lost it in a fire. Instead of lost in a fire, there's no way there's no way she can pull it out again. The question is, ihachi hainu nisrafa. Well, isn't that the same thing as burned? I mentioned the third case of the braisa. And also, what do you mean? What does the braisa say that she hid the ksuba away? What are you going to say about that? The two ibda lamali. And also, why does the braisa need to say anything about it being lost? So Tosfos points out that third question seems to be a repetition of the first one. And so they say that there are actually. If you say that if you ask that the hainu nisrafa, that ibda is the same thing as nisrafa, then that's the same thing as asking why it has to say ibda. So there are Rishonim, the Ritva mentions, for example, that maybe we shouldn't be going to that third question. Tosfos themselves says that what they mean, Tosfos themselves say that it means that we're asking why did the Braisa use the word Ibda then? If it means Nisrafa, if it means Ibda Ba'ur, then say that. Don't use the word Ibda, which then we have to understand what it means. Yeah.
So what is Ibda?
So that's the question. Ella, no, what it means like this. Kol Ibda, if she lost her ksuba, ki hitmina b'fanenu dami, then we consider it the equivalent of if she hid away the ksuba in front of us. Meaning we don't accept her claim. V'lo yabinama, we do not give her the ksuba, according to our papa, that we don't give her the ksuba money. Ad amri edim nisrafa ksubasa, unless there are edim who come and say that the ksuba is burnt. So therefore, we would understand the braisa as follows. Ibda ksubasa is as if hitmina ksubasa, so no good. But nisrafa ksubasa, then we look and see if there are edim. So this machloikas for Papa and Rav Abo, we said we can refer it to the Mishnah or we can refer it to the Braisa. Man de masni la Braisa, the one who says that the machloikas on how to understand it refers to the Braisa, Kol Shekhanah Masnitzin. How much more so that the Machloikas can refer to the Mishnah, where the Mishnah didn't say anything about a Ksuba anyway, so therefore it's much easier to, you can easily understand the Mishnah to mean a place where they don't write Ksubas at all. Whereas the first version, who says that the discussion between Rabbi Boa and Rabbi Papa refers to the Mishnah, Aval Abraisa Lai. They would say that no, the Braisa obviously clearly indicates that you have to write a receipt. Kikushia, because like our question that we said, what is Ibda and Hitmina and whatever, if you say that the Braisa means that you have to write a receipt, then it's very straightforward. It doesn't matter whether Ibda or Hitmina or what have you, whatever happens to the Ksuba, either way, you give the husband a receipt and that's good. Tosfos, by the way, points out an interesting thing. If we just said a minute ago that the case, that according to the Papa, the Braisa is talking about that the Ksuba was lost in a fire, then who cares whether it's the place where you normally write a Ksuba or not? Either way, the Ksuba is gone. Why does he still have to stick with his previous answer that it's a place where you don't write a Ksuba? And the answer is, Tosfos says, because there's a din that you're not allowed to be with your wife without a Ksuba. So in a place where they don't have a minyan to write a Ksuba, okay, they don't write the Ksuba period, so then it's fine. You rely on the verbal agreement. But in a place where you're supposed to write a Ksuba, if the Ksuba gets lost, in fact, they're not allowed to be together until a new Ksuba is written. They have a standard thing for that called Ksuba de Irkasa, the Ksuba that was lost.
So how do they write the Ksuba?
What they do is the husband and wife go to Beis Din, and Beis Din writes them out, basically a duplicate of their original Ksuba. But they write specifically in it that they write the lashon of that ksuba is it includes language that says this is a replacement for a previous ksuba that was lost, precisely because we want to make sure what happens if she hid away the ksuba, for example, and now she's going to use this ksuba de irkasa to collect her 200, and later on she's going to come and collect again with the original. Therefore, we clarify that this one is a replacement.
So that way, Beis Din
knows to be on the lookout for any other one.
So if she comes with a replacement Ksuba,
then she comes to collect.
Beis Din keeps it.
No, then Beis Din gives her the 200, and then either we're saying. So we're saying, according to Rabbi Bo, you write a receipt. According to the Papa, so that's the thing. According to the Papa, if it's a place where they normally write a Ksuba, then yes, you have to write a receipt. What does our Mishnah mean, and what does our Mishnah mean, and what does the Braisa mean? According to the Papa, it means in a place where they don't normally write Ksubas, then there's no reason to need a receipt. Then you can just rely. She's only going to bring out the Edom, and that's that. Or even in a place where they don't normally write one, if he, for whatever reason of his own, decided to write her one, which then the din does not apply that if it gets burned, you have to write a new one. So therefore, there's no concern about there being a new one out there. Then also it's good enough that she has her agent.
Any such places where they didn't write?
Nowadays, I don't know, but in those days, yeah, there were. We'll learn about it later in the Masechta. Then the Mishnah had said, "Im yesh edim." The Mishnah had said that if there were edim that she went out with a hinuma, etc., then she gets the 200. So before we discuss the possibility that she uses the edim and then she uses the ksuba. Now we have another possibility. The Leichosh, why aren't we concerned? Dilma Mapka Ede Hinuma Bahai based in Regavia. She'll bring the Ede Hinuma to one based in and collect. Bahada Mapka Ede Hinuma based in Bebedin Akrina. And then she'll bring Edim of the Hinuma, either the same Edim or different ones, in another based in and collect. The answer is you're right. B'makom d'lo efsho. Okay, where it's impossible otherwise. If it's a place where they write a ksuba, then fine. She doesn't have a ksuba after that because once they pay it, they rip it up with a kara based in. But if you don't write a ksuba, but makom delay up, you're in a place where it's impossible, vadek has been in shayva, then he's fine. Even Rav Papa will have to admit that in that case you write a shayva, you write a receipt for the husband. They have to know whether another wall is thrown on it, because otherwise, yeah. Now we said in the Braisa had beautiful for now kosher basoda, that they brought in front of her a cup of basoda. My kosher basoda, Amar of Adaba Ava kosher yain shal truma ma'avir in the for now. They bring in front of her a cup of wine of truma. And therefore, kosher basoda means like the cup of good news. Like this is showing everybody the good news that she's a basula. Why truma? Kolima ruuya hoisa zulachal b'truma. As if to say, this woman would have been fit to eat truma. In other words, she would have been able to marry a kohen, and then she would have been able to eat truma. Okay, so now she's marrying a Yisrael, but she would have been. There's no problem of zlus or anything that she would have been possible to a kohen.
That's a nice thing. You could do better.
No, it's yeah. Okay. Yeah.
What's that?
It's like saying she could have done better. Okay, I don't know. Maski for a papa. So the papa asks on that. Wait a minute. Otter almana milarachol b'truma. What are you talking about? If you have an almana, if you have a bas koyin, not a bas kohen. If you have a woman who, if you have a woman who's an almana who was married to somebody and then who, and then he dies and then she marries a kohen, she can marry a kohen hedyot. Milay achol the truma, doesn't she eat truma? So yeah, then by the same token, you could use the kohen shobasoda for an almana. What's special about it for a basula? Ella, Amar Papa. No, what it means is zureshis kitruma reshis. It means that you're saying this is her first. This is her first beila. Like truma is the first of the crop. So that's why they use truma. I saw a verse that was quoted from the Imre Emes from the Imre Emes of Ger, who said that the idea is that the deeper idea behind this is truma has to be given with the proper intention, and therefore we're symbolizing the idea that their married life also has to begin with the proper intentions. Tanya, we learned
it.
Well, no, but especially the beginning of things. He says that he says I don't want to get too far off topic because I want to finish. But we know in Shas that there's two kinds of korbanos where if you bring the korban, we learned about this in Yuma and Sochem extensively, that if you bring a korban having in mind that it's a different korban, most of them are kosher, they just don't count as a chiyuv. But a Pesach and a Chatas are completely possible. Why the Pesach? Because it's the beginning of the Jewish people as a nation. The beginnings are the most important things. You have to have the proper intention more by the beginning than anything else. Similarly over here. Alright. Tanya, instead, it's not a cup of wine of truma. They bring in front of her a barrel of wine. Amar Rav Abba Abba, they do the barrel of wine, he says, in all cases. But b'sula ma'avir l'fanah truma. But if she's a b'sula, they use a sealed barrel of wine. Ba'ula ma'avir l'fanah p'sucha. If she's a ba'ula, then they bring an open barrel of wine. Question is, why do that? Never come b'sula, become ba'ula, they never cloud. Let's just... Apparently, in those days, it was, I don't know. Maybe they only do it if everybody knows that she's a b'sula, I don't know. Anyway, the question is, never come a b'sula. Why don't we just bring the barrel of wine if she's a b'sula, become a b'sula, never klal, and then not do it for the b'sula at all, and that way it'll show the difference. The answer is, zimna de tafsa masayim, because you could have a case where the woman, when she's claiming her b'sula, she goes and grabs a hold of 200 zuz without basin. And then when Beis Din tries to take it away from her, she says, you need proof to take it away from me. I was actually a basula. The fact that they didn't bring the barrel of wine. It's nusi. There was an onus. They got drunk or whatever, and they couldn't carry it. It doesn't prove that I'm not a basula. So therefore, you need to be able to disprove her claim solidly, and therefore they always bring the barrel of wine no matter what. But if she's a bowler, it's open, and that way people remember that, and they can give ages that it was open, and then and that's that.
The top is open?
I guess the top is open, yeah. So Tosfos points out, by the way, so why don't we say the same thing about the klias, the toasted grain from the Mishnah, why don't we say the same thing about the cup? The answer is because when we say itnusi, who is itnusi, if it's something hard to do, like carrying a big heavy barrel of wine, something light, like a cup of truma, like a cup of wine of truma, or the nuts to the clients or whatever to the kids, there's no itnusi who did itnusi. They got a little shikar at the Sheva Brachos, they'll still give them out.
Barrel is different.
Yeah, barrel is different.